far into the woods, they heard Andeg's distinctive croak. Crack! Crack! A crack! There, said Mama, pointing. You go to him, O Machias. He doesn't trust me, and I don't blame him. She gave O Machias a crust of bannock bread, a treat, and sent her ahead, although she stayed within sight, should O Machias need her. And something happened, sure enough, that made Mama glad she stayed close, though she couldn't have explained it if she tried. Far ahead, she heard branches cracking and a sound she knew well, a low chuffing. Bears, high in the oak trees, stuffing themselves with acorns, the tubby young bears moved along the thinnest branches. More crashing, now a squeal. One of the bears ventured out too far, curious, and tumbled right out of the tree. He picked himself up and stood on his hind legs. His acorn chubby belly stuck out like La Poltra's. Then Mama saw both little bears loping and bounding through the woods toward O Machias. Daughter! She shouted. Bears are shy, and these wouldn't seek O Machias out to attack, surely. On the other hand, they could be dangerous, especially if wounded or angered. Mama ran toward O Machias, but then stopped, afraid to disturb what took place. The two young bears bounded curiously toward her daughter. She saw O Machias turn sharply to the bears, and then, after a moment of surprise, O Machias greeted the animals. She stood quietly before them, and she was smiling. Mama was further surprised and frightened when, without a sound of warning, a huge sow bear, fattened for winter, rambled out of the bush and passed O Machias without acknowledging her, a human, as the least bit strange or out of place. And the younger bears, was she talking to them? Mama couldn't see. She crept nearer and listened to what her daughter said. Ahi, Anin, Neshime, she said to the nearest one. You've gotten fat. She smiled at their bumbling, chubby bodies. They were huge. Over the summer, they had grown until they outweighed her by a great deal, though they were still bashful and hung back, just beyond the reach of her fingertips as she spoke to them. So you're getting ready to sleep, she said, offering the bannock pieces. Here, my brothers, sleep well. The bears stood before her, testing the air, the unfamiliar smell of the bannock, and then each one bent to the bit of bread she held, flicked it up with a muscular tongue, and loped off into the woods behind their mother, who was clearly just a little tired of them following her along, and grumpy, because she wanted to sleep. Andeg returned that evening to sit just outside the circle of the outdoor cooking fire. He hopped a little closer when O Machias tempted him with a bit of stew meat. He never did trust Mama again, though. Never did perch near and watch her at work, tipping his head side to side as though he were learning her actions. He still warned her of all approaching animals or strangers, but he was wary of her ever after she lost her temper and kept his distance, which made her sad. Andeg did, however, perform a great service in the winter cabin. While O Machias dragged kettle after kettle of mud to the side of the cabin and, along with Angeline, chinked the cracks that had opened during hot weather, Andeg hunted. His vigilance and hatred for mice helped the whole family in their efforts to ready the cabin for winter. He chased mice, tried to pounce on them, swept them away with his wings, even caught a few and pecked them sharply as though to warn them, and they never did come back. They sought other cabins and wigwams where there was not a frightful crow to bother them. Now it was time to harvest the wild rice that grew across from the island in the great sloughs of Kakagan, where Mama's brother and one of her sisters lived. It was a part of the year everyone looked forward to, because there would be cousins to play with, games in the rice camps, the pleasures of talk, feasting, more talk, more visiting, and feasting. Early in the morning, then, they all set out in the canoe they had worked on a year ago. It was beautifully made, light and strong, carefully waterproofed with pitch by Grandma, who kept it in good repair, and in its own house by the side of the lake. They all got in, Mama in back to paddle and steer, Grandma up front taking turns with Angeline, who held Niwu in his cradleboard. They all fit into the canoe with plenty of room to spare. That space, they hoped, they would fill with the wild rice, the mananomin, the good seed that would sustain them through the winter. Omakias envied her big sister. She wanted to hold and play with her smiling baby brother. Niwu had his second tooth and seemed even prouder of it than the first. Omakias had saved a bit of hard bannock bread for him to chew on, and she put it in his mouth. Niwu never even bit her. Omakias put her finger to his cheek, stroked it softly. Why, oh why, did she have to take care of Big Pinch? She sighed and turned to him. She was in charge of Pinch, or he was in charge of her. She wasn't sure which, because it was one of his mischief days, when nothing she could do would satisfy him. Andeg, perched on Omakias's shoulder, was settled in for the long ride, and sympathetic to Omakias. He knew that Pinch had something to do with the bad day Mama had lost her temper. Before they started out, Grandma gave her tobacco to the water and asked for a safe, smooth crossing. The sun was mild and the waves low, the wind fresh but still warm, and things would have gone perfectly if Pinch hadn't teased Andeg. But he did. Every time he thought no one was looking, he tried to pull a feather out of Andeg's tail. "Gago, Pinch," said Omakias. "Gago, Pinch," said Angeline. "Gago, Pinch," said Mama when he tried again. "Gago, Pinch," said Grandma wearily. "Gago, Pinch," said Omakias again. They must have said it more times as they traveled the lake than there were waves or fish alongside of them. They said it so many times they didn't hear themselves anymore. "Stop it, Pinch. Gago, Pinch. Stop it. Stop." Same as when they said it on shore, Pinch didn't hear it. He just kept trying to pull a feather. Finally, Pinch got a hold of the black tip of Andeg's pride and joy, his tail. "Gago, Pinch!" Everyone gasped. This time, it was Andeg who spoke. Terrified at the crow's harsh croak, Pinch nearly threw himself out of the canoe, nearly tipped them all over in his panic to get to Mama, who yelled, of course, "Gago, Pinch!" causing Andeg to flap his wings and say again, "Gago, Pinch!" which made Pinch cry, an embarrassment he never quite got over. From then on, he regarded Andeg with stubborn awe, treated the bird with reserved respect, and in fact behaved just a little better, for just a little while, as Nokomis told him that his rascal ways annoyed even the animals. "Wait until you hear what Mukwa, the bear, says, or Grandfather Owl. Think of that," Nokomis scolded. Pinch didn't want to. When they reached the river's entrance and paddled toward the rice camp, Grandma noted with disappointment the thinness of the rice stalks. Too much standing water in the spring had caused them to grow too quickly. Some of the rice heads drooped right over into the water. She frowned. The season would be a poor one unless the water in the other rice beds had been lower. They reached the shores of the camp, and there, amid the general happiness at seeing one another, the grown-ups learned the rice was indeed sparse that year. This was not good news, but the children could not have cared less. Nothing ruined their fun. Immediately, Omakias raced off, her crow flapping alongside her, to find her cousins and introduce them to her friend Andeg. There under the tree, she saw Wishkob's daughters, Little Bee and Twilight, and her cousins, including Tata, a thin and quiet boy just a little younger than Omakias. He was the son of her mother's brother, Akwaenzi. As soon as Omakias saw Tata, an itchy, joking mood always came upon her, and she looked around to see what tricks she could play on her quiet cousin. His older brothers were rough and ran wild, and he had a sister known as a strong, swift